warlike Turricant, am I right? It's Amigos, everything Amiga. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about Turrican 3.
Yes.
Aaron, have you ever wished you lived in Germany?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Why? Why?
Listen, I find the German people to be amiable. I think they're intelligent, good-looking people. Yeah, a man of my size could fit in right there, I think, and get away with it.
Probably.
I think they have some good food. I think they have some beautiful locales. And I think it's in a very nice, sort of centralized location for a lot of fine traveling throughout the lovely country and abroad to the surrounding countries. I think there's a lot of good stuff to see and do over there. I think I would fit in nicely with the German folks. And I believe my family actually has some German roots as well. It's Irish. I think that would be nice. So, yes, I could be. Now, there would be some hurdles. The language, for example, I'd have to get used to it because it does seem difficult for me.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think it'd be a good fit. And if I was able to go over there, I think I could do pretty well, Boat. Why do you ask?
Well, I was just thinking that at least they say it correctly. You know, the rest of the world says Turrican, but they say it like we do, Turrican.
Yeah, but we say it. I know you're referring to our town, Hurricane, which is pronounced stupidly because even the founding fathers of this town did not pronounce it Hurricane. They saw trees that were bent over at a horrible angle, and one was heard to remark, "It looks like a hurricane hit this creek," and thus the creek was named Hurricane Creek, and thus the town was called Hurricane. But somehow, down through the ages, someone was too cool for school, and they took the cool town name of Hurricane and made it into Hurricane, which I've never understood and I've never liked.
When do you think, there's no record. I know you're sort of a historian, a local historian. Is there a record of the first time somebody was like, you know what, this hurricane thing, no good. We're going hurricane from now on.
And I can't tell you, there's no written record to my knowledge of the moment that someone mispronounced our town name and made it stick. I can only guess that people thought that the town being named something that was a force of nature was a bad look, you know. But these people were fools because, I mean, how many cool town names do you get? Like, the next town over is Milton. Like, nobody gives a crap about how you pronounce that. But
well, that's how I taught Eep how to pronounce the name Cam Newton.
Explain.
Well, she was like, Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's not Newton. It's Newton. She's like, Newton. And I'm like, it's like Milton. Milton. She's like, Milton. I'm like, yeah, Milton. Newton, Milton. She said, Newton, Milton. And I was like, you got it.
It's funny because after a couple of years, Cam Newton looked like he played like he'd been hit by a hurricane. And we haven't seen much from him since. He's a football player for you people that have no idea what we're talking about. But yeah, you know, I kind of resent the name of the town, especially since around this area, we've also got a town called Tornado. And they don't pronounce that Tornado, for example. You know, but I also go to, like, Versailles. They pronounce that Versailles or vice versa. They pronounce stuff. I don't know what it is around here. I guess it's just a local flavor accent that gets muddled with the proper pronunciation of things. But it's confusing to people that don't know our weird customs here in West Virginia as to why they're named that. It's hard to explain. I can't explain it. Why do we mispronounce stuff? Because we're dumb. I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, you know, speaking of forces of nature, Aaron, let's talk about Turrican 3. All right, Aaron, it's Turrican 3. Turrican 3, I want to take you back to 1992, okay?
Okay.
And Turrican 2 had been out, and Factor 5 over in Germany was like, you know what? It's time to start planning the sequel, Turrican 3. And so they approached the founder, the originator of the Turrican series, Manfred Trenz. You ever see Manfred Trenz before?
That sounds like either a really good name or like a very interesting trend that's coming.
He is a interesting looking guy. He's got a scruffy beard,
yeah,
and extremely well groomed mullet. At least he did back in the 90s. I don't think anybody's seen him recently, so I'm not sure. I don't know. I looked around to see if he'd been active at any particular, you know, retro fairs or anything like that. Seems like he's kind of dropped out of the public eye, so I don't know if he still maintains the mullet, but from him in his prime, in his Turrican days, it was mighty and glorious.
Mm.
So the thing is, you know, Manfred was ready to move on. He'd done what he wanted to do with the 2D Turrican series. He put out the version for the consoles, the first version, the Mega Turrican for the Super Nintendo, for the NES. And he said, you know what, I'm going to start working on 3D Turrican. I will see you guys later. So Factor 5 decided to say, okay, we don't need you, Manfred. We're going out on our own. And they started developing Turrican 3. At the same time, they noticed that although everyone in the world seemed to have played Turrican 2, not everyone in the world seemed to have bought Turrican 2. and so they looked at which way the wind was blowing. They looked at the rampant piracy on the Amiga. And they looked at sort of overall sales of Amiga software were starting to go down at the same time that console sales were starting to skyrocket. And so they decided they were going to produce a Turrican game, a console-first Turrican game. In fact, they had no intention of porting this to the Amiga at first. They said, you know, we're just going to make this a Mega Drive release. We're going to make a Mega Turrican. It's going to be for the Mega Drive. It's hilarious. We had Super Turrican for the Super Nintendo. We're going to have Mega Turrican for the Mega Drive. So they started porting it, and but the problem was that they could not find a publisher to take this on. You know, publishing a console game is not the same as publishing a computer game. You got to have a publisher that is willing to take a pretty significant financial risk to make it happen. And so what ended up happening is there was sort of a public outcry within the Amiga community and the Amiga magazines that Turrican 3 was not getting a computer release, an Amiga release. And so there was the great backpedaling of Factor 5. And they said, yes, in fact, it was our plan all along to make an Amiga version. And they brought in this team formerly known as Kaiko. Kaiko was an outfit that that ended up bringing the computer version home. It was combined. There was a six-man team that was behind this. So this is a far cry from the original Turrican, where it was basically Manfred Trenz and then some people that just kind of prettied it up a little bit. And, of course, Heuselbeck on the sound. They had a whole team of designers on this. But Julian Egebrecht, who was present on the original Turrican, he was also in attendance. He was the only original Turrican designer that was present on the Turrican 3 project. This thing ended up they took the Mega Drive original and they ported it to the Amiga. And because of their difficulty in finding a publisher, the Amiga version, though last to be developed, was the first to be released. This was released in 1993, and it was published by Rainbow Arts in Germany, who later became Soft Gold. They were a heck of a producer. They produced most of the greatest hits of the later Amiga period. They produced Candy Hill, which is that's actually a Game & Watch style game for the Amiga.
I've actually tried that, believe it or not.
Okay. What yeah, is it good?
It was in another game, as I recall, but I did try it. Yeah, it's not much to write home about. It's a cute little diversion.
They did Lollipop. Remember how much fun we had with Lollipop, that platformer?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They did a game called Window Wizard, which I definitely want to try. It looks like a Crazy Climber style game where you're playing a window washer. It looks very impressive.
Oh, yeah.
That came out in 91.
Great.
Lollipop came out in 95, so it came out after this. Outside of Germany, this game was published by Renegade. Of course, we know Renegade, those lovable scamps, the Bitmap Brothers, their publishing unit. They did it all. They did Sensi, they did Chaos Engine, everything. So Renegade, definitely a hallmark publisher that probably got this into the hands of a lot of stores and a lot of magazines. So good move on getting Renegade to publish it. This game was finally published in 1994, Aaron. This is super interesting. The publisher that stepped forward and took a chance on Turrican 3 on the Mega Drive was none other than Data East.
Hmm.
Data East, Japanese publisher, who decided to take this on. And so you have Data East, the publisher for the Mega Drive version.
You know, I can see that in a lot of ways, because if you think about it, this game has a lot in common with a lot of similar Japanese produced games.
Absolutely.
Like a Dexter or something. Like, I mean, listen, it's a far cry, but you get where I'm going with here.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I mean, it's a run and gun game, not dissimilar to something like RoboCop or Rolling Thunder or something like that. So, yeah, I can definitely see why Data East took a look at this and they're like, yeah, we'll go for it.
Yeah.
The Amiga version, this is an OCS ECS version. I did try this out on the Amiga 1000. I got further than I thought I did. When you watch the original Attract screen, you see the title screen, and then you see a picture of our hero, Ben McGuire, in his Turrican suit going, "Arr!"
Yeah, he looks unhappy.
I saw that, and then it crashed. So the Amiga 1000, not suitable for running Turrican 3, but you can get a little taste.
Get your gimmick in there.
Once I get the Rejuvenator, it's going to be on like Donkey Kong. So, anyway, this game is the first Amiga game, Aaron, with Dolby surround sound.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was also available with Dolby surround sound on the Genesis. I am not exactly sure how surround sound works on the Amiga. This is something that if you happen to be listening or watching this on YouTube, please let us know. I've never seen a surround sound system set up on an Amiga. And since the Amiga only has left and right channels out on the back, I don't know if there's a... Have you ever heard of a third-party sound card that gives you any sort of surround sound capabilities?
There's many of those. Yeah, not many, but yeah, they do exist, absolutely.
Well, that would be something that I'd love to see. Perhaps if somebody is coming to Bootfest this year that has one of those third-party sound cards, I'd love to hear the glorious Turrican 3 soundtrack pumped through in Dolby surround sound. So, Aaron, before we get into the meat of this game, tell me your history with Turrican, and when you fired this up for the first time, what your thoughts were.
Well, my history with Turrican 3 is... I don't think I'd
just,
ever
I'm just
tried
talking about
it.
The Turrican series in general.
Well, in my history, I can tell you it pretty quickly. Beautiful games that I was horrible at. The first Turrican, I was not good. The second Turrican, we played it enough to where I got still not good, but not totally embarrassing. You know, because there were some elements of the game that I just found difficult to get my head around. Plus, it's just that sort of frenetic, frantic-paced game. You know, and you sort of have to memorize where stuff is. Plus, it's that super mazy, you know, the second Turrican. And so when this one came up, I was like, okay, Turrican 3, I assumed it would be more of the same. And it really, at first glance, you would think, yep, more of the same. But it's not totally like the other Turrican, especially the second one. They changed your weaponry. They added a quote-unquote feature. But I found myself less crappy at this game. Right out of the gate, I actually felt like I was doing okay. I was getting places. I didn't get lost as much. I think now I'm not sitting here and telling you I played every level, because I didn't get real far into the game. I played the early levels a lot, but I found them much easier to get around. Like, I didn't get lost as much. On the few places where I got stuck, I could see the folly of my ways if I went and watched someone else get to that point. And so I was able to get further easier than I had on the previous Turricans. Also, the power, I was more familiar with the Turrican, you know, the setup with the multiple power-ups and stuff. This is much like the second Turrican. This has tons and tons of power-ups in it. I thought it, when I first booted it up, I thought it's, you know, had a good tune. I thought the music in this was good. I don't, you know, I didn't get to hear every track, so I can't, I don't know how it fully compares with Turrican 2, but I mean, I thought it sounded pretty good. And I thought the graphics were quite good. I mean, I thought this was a well above average looking and playing game. That was my initial impression, Bode.
Okay, yeah, I had the same sort of experience. This game, like you said, does bring some new things to the table. There is a new weapon, and this weapon is taken right out of R-Type. In R-Type, there's a weapon, a special kind of laser that sort of snakes along the ground. It fires out in front of you, but it also snakes along both the top of the cavern and the bottom of the cavern. In this game, it does the same thing. So you gain that weapon. The homing missile also returns. You're still able to curl into a Samus Aran like ball and fire off some bombs. You've still got the multi-shot, the homing missile, but the surround weapon is missing. The thing that surrounded you, almost like an invincibility type thing, that is gone. And in its place, Aaron, we have what might be the most controversial aspect of Turrican 3, and that is the plasma rope. Aaron,
yeah.
Tell me about your experience with the plasma rope and how it compares to other methods of traversal in other video games you've played.
Well, so you'll recall in Turrican 2, you had that cool ability where you could basically shoot all around you with your arm. You know, sort of like you could move up and down. It was almost like the arm in Tron in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Your gun would move around. It wasn't just his arm, but, you know. So in this, you still have the movable arm, but you've got this, we'll call it a rope, but it's more like a series of dots that stream up, and they will allow you to hook to something, like grapple to it, and then swing around, you know, like a body commando or something like that. But to get this thing to go is real funky, because you have to sort of hold down the button, then you have to aim the arm, then you sort of let the button go, then you do your swinging and your grappling, and which is, to me, I had all kinds of trouble. And then the hardest part for me was to turn off the rope, which you have to also. Now, I mean, here's what gets me about this rope, because right away you don't have to instantly start using it, but there are points fairly early on where you're going to have to use this rope, okay, or dots. And anytime you had to use them, for a little while, they let you use them when you're not screwed and not getting like bombarded, but eventually you have to be able to use this as like it's second nature. And that's when I was screwed, because I could not do it. And then on top of everything else, I mean, there's a lot going on in this game in terms of you've got all these weapons, and then you've also got the rope, and you've also got to jump, all right? And so there are different ways you could set your guy up to do these things. One of the options you could go with is the gamepad control. I could not use that. Because I'd played this so much with up to jump, and I noticed someone else made this comment that I couldn't play it with the button to jump. And so that further compounded my folly when it came to trying to control this. So I will say the new weaponry, I was okay with everything, but the rope, I just could not master. I watched people play this, and they seemed to be good with the rope. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I suppose it's possible to get good at it. I just didn't play it long enough to get good at it. But I played this game a significant amount this week. I had plenty of time. And I really did not ever get good with the rope. The rope falls somewhere between Body Commando and Worms and its usability. It's harder than both those games for me. What did you think?
Well, I think it's definitely closer to Worms, because the grappling hook in Bionic Commando has only two positions. It's fully extended, or you're pulling yourself up with no control. In this game, just like in Worms, you can fire that thing out and you can scale the rope up and down as you're swinging. You also have a tremendous amount of control over the physics of the rope in this game. Versus in Bionic Commando, it literally behaves like a real grappling hook with a chain on the end of it. You can swing in the way that you would if you were in real life. Now, it sounds like I'm selling the rope in this game, but unfortunately, even though it gives you more control and it allows you to do more things, it also is simultaneously more frustrating and more difficult to use. Like you said, getting in a position where you can fire the rope where you want it to go is difficult because of the one button. But then even, I was like, I'm going to just try this out on the Mega Drive, and I'm going to see if having a dedicated rope button helps. And it helped a little bit, but it was still incredibly awkward to aim my cannon up there and then get the rope to go exactly where I wanted it to. It was really difficult. And then, like you said, just being able to let go of the rope, they picked the worst way to do it. I don't know if they were afraid that like players were going to accidentally let go of the rope by pushing a button or whatever, but having to hold the button down and then push down to release the rope is incredibly awkward, because while you have the rope out, you can't do anything else and you're tethered to the rope. And so I spent time just stuck in certain areas because I was screaming at the TV, let go of the rope. And part of the reason was that I started out, just like you said, playing this with button for jump. And when you play this with button for jump, the normal hold, I think it's hold up in the button, because the up is functionally useless. Yeah, it's functionally useless when you're using the button for jump, because the button, it replaces the up. And so it was incredibly confusing. So I switched over to up for jump, and I ended up having a better experience, which is odd for me to say.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, the rope just feels like it was shoehorned in at the last minute, like just as a differentiator. They saw, I'm sure they looked at Bionic Commando and they said, okay, well, this is something else that you can do besides shoot. One of the things that Bionic Commando did right was that in Bionic Commando, you can't jump. You have to rely on the grappling hook for everything. And when you do that, that's actually a boon to the player, because the player doesn't have to make the decision of, do I need to jump or do I need to use the grappling hook? What does the game want me to do? How can I progress? And removing that decision from the player, it actually allows you to have more fun with the game. And you're going to need to, have fun with this game, because you're in this is different than the regular Turrican, where you blunder around in a maze-like level until your time runs out and you die. This game, you have a much more linear path. And I would say that the game, I would call the game easier to get farther. Although farther is somewhat different, because you're resetting the goalposts when you have a linear level versus more of a maze-like level where you're collecting stuff and you're trying to find the exit. I found myself that I was able to get what I consider to be further in Turrican 3. But I think a lot of it was the fact that this is the first Turrican game, I think, that has four difficulty levels, all the way from easy to manic. If you're on the very easiest level, which I didn't think was that easy, it ends, the game ends after two levels. After level two, it says, congratulations, you beat it. Now try the normal difficulty. So you don't get to see everything. This game is five levels long. You start out in a genetic engineering lab. By the way, I should tell you about the plot of the game. So you play as Bryn McGuire, and you don the Turrican assault suit. Are trying to defeat, you get a frantic call from a lady named Juko, the beautiful Juko, and she's been kidnapped by the machine. The machine is a some sort of AI creature that is releasing robots and other nasty things, or planet killing, soul destroying the machine. So you're trying to defeat the machine in this game. The backstory is ultimately useless, because there's nothing in the game that furthers or gives you any more information. There's no cutscenes or anything like that. So you start out in the genetic engineering lab. Then you move on to everyone's favorite stage, the sewage treatment plant. We got one of those in Hurricane.
Yeah.
Next up, You've got a level that's set in the air. There's a bunch of girders that are being pulled or like hoisted by helicopters. It's a very strange level. And then you move down into the scrapyard after you finish that. So that world three is kind of a multi level. At level four, you've got to have your H.R. Giger alien world. And then finally, in level five, it's the factory of the machine. So I will say that this game, throughout its five levels, does give you a variety of locations. And this is a game that does have multiple stages. You're beating several stages within a world. Now, that's a good thing. The bad thing is that it doesn't. There's no overworld map that gives you any indication of how far you're progressing through a stage. In addition, there's also no, like, you've reached stage 1, 2. And as a player, I want to know sort of how I'm doing, where I'm ending up and where I'm going. You don't have to give me an overworld map. I mean, that's the best option, obviously. But just saying, like, if this is stage 1, 1, 1, then that tells me, hey, I bet there's going to be like four little stages within this one stage or something like that. I would have liked to have seen that. Does that make a difference to you at all?
Well, it does. And I also kind of wish they would let me know what the score, what was going on in terms of where I was at. But the backstory, the level stuff, this is stuff that we've come to, we see this a lot. This isn't something that just was not that done that often in a lot of these games from Europe, which I will say this one doesn't suffer from all the pitfalls that we have come across in games like this. But I mean, yeah, those are the creature comforts that I miss on what a game like this. I'm with you on a lot of what you said. Did I find this easier? Yes, it could have been because of the difficulty level. I set mine low too at first. But I found it easier for the most part until I had to really start using the rope a lot. I think, this is a funny one to me, Boat, because they had a lot. I like a lot of this game. I like a lot of it. I think we complained about the levels being dumbly made. Like, I didn't get that. I thought they did a pretty good job with the levels on this. I thought they were fun and interesting. I thought they were varied. I thought they had some interesting ideas. There's mid-level boss fights, which is really cool. I like that. And some of the stuff in it was interesting. Like I said, the tunes are good. The variety of weapons were good. It lets you sort of cater. Once you know what all the weapons are, you can sort of cater them to what you like to do. Like, I'm not necessarily into the big fireball, but I do like the spread shot, so I can sort of stick with that, which I like. But there are some things that undermine it. The ropes, I would say the worst. It's not the only thing I don't like, but it's the worst, the most egregious of the bunch. The one thing that got me on this was like it didn't, despite the way it looked, it didn't really feel like a Turrican game because of the lack of the weaponry from the second game. That doesn't make this a bad game. It just makes it, it has a different feel. And something tells me that this was something that was on a lot of people's minds, because I read a lot of people talking about this game, and they mentioned that. Like, some people, there were people that said, hey, best in the series, but a lot of people thought they lost their way, on this one, because they didn't have that unique characteristic that made Turrican 2 a real special game. And put subbing in the rope for that, it doesn't do it, because of the shortcomings of the rope. And the funny thing is, here's what gets me, because in the docs, they call this the plasma rope. But even the docs say the rope is a bit tricky at the beginning, but with practice, you'll be able to do astonishing things with it. I agree with half that sentence. I never could do anything astonishing with it. And then what further hamstrings the rope is that by the time you've launched the rope, all right, first of all, you're putting your hand up in the air like an idiot. All right. Like,
yeah, I've got to break in here and tell you about what Pac-Billy just put in the chat, because he sums it up perfectly. He says the best thing about the rope is right before he uses it, Turrican extends his arm and raises it up like he's on stage belting out a show tune.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Even raises his chin. It's like he's getting ready to sing an aria.
But what makes it worse is, so you've taken forever to do this. Pac-Billy's dead on. It's exactly what it looks like. And then once you launch the rope, unlike a lot of games of this type, where you can see, okay, you've jumped up, you can see there's a ledge up there. You can't shoot your rope even the slightest bit off screen. And so that limits its usability, even if the rope's helping you. Because in a lot of games, you can jump up, kind of shoot your rope off screen a little bit. It'll catch on to something, whatever's up there. This rope, you have to be able to see what you're shooting. And I found the ability to get the rope to stick to the certain places I wanted to put it difficult. Like, I found it, even when I took the time, because launching the rope is not that tough. Any idiot can do that, because God knows they give you plenty of time as you sit there and pivot your arm. But placing the rope in the right spot is tricky. It shouldn't be. I don't know why. And then, of course, getting rid of it's also horribly tricky. Something else that doesn't do this game any favor to me, because sometimes I would get, even in this game, I would get lost, is the timer. Do they need a timer in this? Probably not. I mean, it's already hard enough. With a timer, it makes it harder. So I didn't like that in any of the Turrican games. So there's a few things in here I would probably jettison. But, I mean, I think you got something here. I mean, I think this is still an above-average Amiga shooter. Also, you mentioned that you thought the rope was sort of like an added, like, at the last minute. I'd like to say, like, Boat, you're crazy. But, I mean, you might not be wrong, because for something that's a major feature, it's not like you're using it right away, and they don't really teach you. You don't get very many levels to teach you how to use it, or, like, you just sort of have to use it at some point. You know, like, I'm just like, I wonder why they really put this in here, because they could have absolutely not had it. So you may be onto something there.
I just think that the important thing to remember, and I was talking to one of the guys in Discord about this, is that because this game was developed as a console-only release, I really feel like the designers felt like they could start from scratch and try and design a game that console gamers wanted to play. Because a lot of console gamers weren't familiar necessarily with the previous Turrican games. They might have heard of them, or maybe they played Turrican 1 5 years ago on the C64, you know. So because the Amiga playing Turrican audience was not first in mind for this game, they designed it differently. They made it more linear. They made it more like a run and gun game, a Contra type affair. You know, not all the way. They put in things that did make it more Turrican-ish, like the Samus era, or really it's more Metroid-y, I guess. But you know, they decided to go the route of other games that are not Turrican. And I don't think it's necessarily to the game's detriment. I mean, I understand if you are a hardcore Turrican fan, you're going to be disappointed with Turrican 3 because it does not deliver more of the same type of gameplay that you're used to. If you are a fan of the Turrican games, you enjoy combing through all of the levels, finding all the secrets, getting all the power-ups, doing that. That's the game loop for you. Versus in this game, this is all about surviving, using the rope, and making it to the end of the level before the time runs out. Now, like you said, this game brings a lot to the table. I thought the mini bosses were great. I thought that they were, you know, they were fun. They had different, you know, ways of attacking. I thought they were drawn very well. I thought for, you know, this being an OCS ECS game, I thought it looked fantastic. I think that the biggest difference is the music. When you listen to that Genesis music, that FM synth chip that they have, boy, the drum track and everything on the Genesis, it just sounds like it's a next-gen game. And the Turrican 3 on the Amiga just sounds like, you know, it's more Turrican music from Chris Hulsbeck.
I thought the music was pretty good. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, the music's fine. I'm just saying that it sounds a billion times better on the Genesis because the Genesis has all those extra channels. It can do a lot more because it's just a more advanced sound chip.
Some people hate the way the Genesis sounds. It's funny because I think for drums and bass and like rock guitar type sounds, it's great, but it doesn't do everything perfectly.
But for a soundtrack like this, and again, I'm sure that Hulsbeck designed, when he wrote the music for this, he designed it with the Mega Drive in mind, and then he sort of, just like the rest of this game was downported to the Amiga, he sort of had to downport the music to the Amiga version. So it would be interesting to talk to him about that.
Did you find the, I mean, I think this is pretty obvious, because I did give the Mega Drive version a whirl, and it seemed more peppy than the Amiga version. Like, I thought it ran at a better clip. I think that was, like, when you, for example, I didn't like using the rope on it either, don't get me wrong, but, like, the rope didn't meander out. Like, it was, everything, the whole situation went quicker to me on the Genesis version, or the Mega Drive version, than on the Amiga version. I suppose that's to be expected, you know, but it's funny, because the Mega Drive and the Amiga, they have a weird relationship, because sometimes the games are better on the Mega Drive, and sometimes they stink. You know, yeah. But I think this is one, and obviously this was designed for it, and I didn't know that story before you told it, but that makes perfect sense, because you can, I think you can tell that they put a lot of time into making this nice and tight on the Mega Drive. But,
mm-hmm. Yeah. The reviews were not horrible for Turrican 3, the Amiga Magazine reviews. The average rating on Lemon for the magazine reviews is about an 80. The lowest review, or one of the lower reviews, was Amiga Force. Amiga Force gave it a 69%. They said this is a tired formula, and you need to try, if you want to play a platforming game, you should try something at the cutting edge. And they recommend you try Lionheart instead. Aaron, would you?
You got that right. Well, I mean, yes, it's not that good.
And however, the people on Lemon, this is a pretty highly rated game, 8.11, which is one of the higher ratings that we see on Lemon Amiga for the user rating. So although people don't tend to remember this game with the fondness that they have, the especially the second Turrican, I think people recognize that it is a solid title in its own right. It's just a different sort of title. We also got some reviews on our Discord server. If you are a patron of the show, you get access to our Discord, and you can leave us a review for us to read on the air. We're going to kick things off here with Pajaco 6502. He says, "The second Turrican game is one of my all-time favorite Amiga games. I never really played Turrican 3 until now. It had some big metal boots to fill." Okay, it's Turrican 2 with a fresh coat of paint. Music is still awesome and the graphics are great. The intro is spine tingling. And for the most part, this is everything I enjoyed about the second game. But for me, at least, the new Bionic Commando style rope arm is broken on the Amiga port. It's tricky to use and you can get stuck on scenery while using it, which led to some cheap deaths. There are places where being quick with the arm is needed to avoid damage, but the clunkiness on the Amiga means you'll end up taking a pounding while trying to use it. I will give the developers a break. Porting the 3-button Mega Drive control system down to 1 button was tough. I don't dislike Turrican 3 on the Amiga, but that rope arm is going to take some getting used to. Honestly, in a day and age of easy emulation, if you want to see what the third iteration of this series should have been, play Mega Turrican. It's virtually the same game, and the controls work better. 7 out of 10. Side note, I could only play this game with Up for Jump. Even after 30 or so years, my muscle memory from the second game kicked in and refused to make peace with a jump button.
We're all in agreement on that one.
Yeah. I will say, Aaron, that this game does have one of the dumber subtitles of all time. This was 1993, hot off the heels of Terminator 2 Judgment Day. They had to give Turrican 3 a snappy subtitle, so they called it Payment Day. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. They literally just slapped that on the box.
You know, something, there are a bunch of things about this game I find odd, okay? Because, again, I think this is a quality game. I know I've went on and on about the rope, and the rope, and the other things I point out are the weaker parts of the game. But, I mean, this is something someone took some time on. The level design's good. The character's good. I like the way the levels are. There's plenty of bad guys. There's a lot of variety. I think you should play it. Okay, I will say that. You just have to. There are things you have to get past.
But it's just funny.
I'll go ahead. I'm sorry, Boat.
I was going to say, I just wanted to tell you about where we stand on eBay. If you're looking to play this, if you're one of those Laurent Giroux types that doesn't touch the emulation, he plays it on the straight and narrow. You're going to be in for, you want to talk about payment day. This thing, the only copy I could find on eBay was $250 shipped from the UK or Germany, and none have been recently sold. So my guess is that this game didn't sell a whole lot of copies, much like Turrican 2 on the Amiga. It was mostly El Pirato.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. But to finish my thought, I think that What strikes me as the strangest on this is everyone, when we started doing Amigas, everybody's like, Turok and 2. It was one of the big staple games of the Amiga. We both heard of it. We both played it. But, like, hardly anybody seemed to ever talk to me about Turok and 3. And I read a lot of messages and even comments on Limits where people are like, oh, yeah, they made a third one. It's like, so I don't know. How this, I mean, 93 is still pretty in the, you know, meaty part of the releases.
I don't know. I think we're starting to get towards the hiney part of the releases.
Right, but I'm saying this, people have remembered games that came out after this. I'm just saying, it strikes me as odd that they would forget this, because, like, this is a quality title. But, I mean, for some people out there, this might be a hidden gem, in all honesty. If you want to go in there and give this a whirl, I think there's a lot here to like.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
I think,
absolutely.
I think it's definitely, I mean, because, listen, Bo, we've killed a lot of crappy games, and I feel like we've sort of killed this, but this is far, far better than probably 85% of the games of this type that we've played on Amigos, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody asked me, I would say, yes, you Turrican.
Welcome to Retro Rewind. I'm your host, British Jones. Whether you're into the Amiga, Commodore 64, or Tiger Floral Print Speed Suits, Retro Rewind has all you need from the friendly hosers of the Great White North. Looking to upgrade your Amiga? Check out the Amiga OS 3.2.2 Kickstart ROM for just $18. Or maybe you need a C64 or C128 diagnostic harness. Grab one while they're hot. Don't miss our best sellers like the 1541 Transit Card for just $1, or the incredible Amiga Coin Cell Battery Adapter. Shop now at Retro Rewind Limited and bring your classic computers back to life. Retro Rewind Limited. Frank's the man.
Amiga News.
Campbell Train.
You know, Aaron, we're so blessed to be here in the United States because we are in the land of the Classic Computer Expo. It seems like no matter what the weekend is, there's always something going down somewhere in the United States. And this past week was no exception. The Indy Classic Computer and Video Game Expo was going down in Indianapolis. Aaron, tell us about it.
I mean, it's exactly what you said, Boat. They had a big turnout here for this bad boy. You know, there's a lot going on there in Middle America, Boat, between the Indy Classic plus the I know Adam from Computer Chronicles has his club up in Michigan running at full tilt, brother. And so there's a lot to look at, a lot to see. I you know, this video is pretty long, 45 minutes. I sat down and watched the whole thing. In fact, I kicked back. I got a new bed this week. I kicked back into bed and turned this on and enjoyed an experience that only a big dork can, which is watching 45 minutes of someone tore a con. But that's what I did. And it's good stuff. Some rare items in here, some old stuff, some new stuff. You know, it's always a good time. To me, to see stuff, and you always see stuff you haven't seen before, and there's always somebody that's got some kind of wacky
there's a 1200 XL. Going.
There you go, your favorite boat right
yeah,
there.
Man. So
someone's holding that up as an Intellivision. I saw all sorts, I'm just sort of flipping through this as we go through, but I saw all sorts of crazy stuff on here, including some weird knockoffs, some pet projects, lots of Mac stuff. I mean, they had a ton of Apple and Mac stuff with this thing, so you can't have everything. But they had, you know, had some luminaries there, a lot of good stuff. Everything from the MSX. I even saw a Spectrum there. So it's a good gathering. You know, they've got a lot more jack up in Indy. Indy's a pretty big town here in the States, and there's a ton of people that live up that way. So by default, you should get a lot of classic computer fans, Boat. Up there, they're In fact, there's Adam right there. I'm not surprised that you get this sort of gathering, but I am jealous. And thank God that we've got our own little tiny con, so at least we can sort of get a taste of what it's like to be at one of these monster cons, Boat. What did you think of all this accumulation of goodies?
Well, it got me excited. It got me excited. You know, we're 1 month out from Boat Fest.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that here in just a bit. It's going to make an appearance later on in the news. But for right now, Aaron, let's move on to the next story.
That looks great, though. Give that a watch, by the way. Recommended. Highly recommended.
Up next, Aaron, we have this is a new video from Doug from Dynamic Computing. This is the PiStorm MU68 update.
Yeah.
How to use WPA2 on your encrypted on your Wi-Fi. So you get basically you're getting if you've got a PiStorm in your Amiga, you can use encrypted Wi-Fi now. Aaron, I listened to this. I listened to this on my commute. I find Doug works better in my ears than on my eyes.
I was surprised nothing you didn't veer Doug. Off the He's road, kill man. Yourself.
but you know, I listened to him go through this, and the fact that I mean, you know, of course, the Amiga needs a TCP/IP stack to even access the internet. That means that not only are you buying a PiStorm, you're getting this package, but then you also have to buy the TCP/IP stack. You got to buy the freaking Roadshow. You know they're not giving that Roadshow away. That thing's big money.
And then so once you got Wi-Fi, you got to have a browser, buddy. And you, that ain't coming cheap either, brother.
Don't forget to pay your $60 for eyebrows.
Yeah.
So listen, if you're one of those you know people with a lot of money in your pocket and you want to get some Wi-Fi, some encrypted Wi-Fi, you need to listen to Doug's thing. Now, Aaron, what were your takeaways from Doug's deal?
Well, I stared, you know, listen, Boat, we play, there's a reason why we play games on this channel, okay? And the reason we play games is because as Doug began his lengthy speech in this video, this goes on for a half hour, my eyes glazed over, and I stared at the screen, tears streamed down my face in a vain attempt to understand what Doug was talking about, trying to follow along with this, because I don't have a PiStorm or any of this stuff. We're not hardware guys, Boat. Just, we've got a lot of hardware. I look at, you know, computers are a lot like my pinball hobby. I love them until they're broke. Then I hate them. And I don't want to be a part of them anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's the way this is. And so do any of my Amigas output the HDMI? No. Can they get Wi-Fi? Pfft, no. If they could, would I pay to get them online? Hell no. Too cheap. You know, so I just want to play games. But if you are so inclined, well, that doesn't mean if just because I'm saying that doesn't mean I'm bragging on anybody. If that's your bag, rock on, brother. Get in there, get your Amiga up online. I don't know where WPA2 in terms of the ranking of that security. I don't know if that's still in. I don't know how long that's going to be in vogue before it's gone.
I think that's the lowest one that's good enough.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And so at some point, I guess you'll have to move along.
Oh, man, there's the old eyebrows ad. It's 30% off. It's only $64.99.
It's not that much.
Week.
But if you've got, so here's the thing. You got an Amiga, right? If you add one of these PiStorms, like you're getting tons of functionality, brother. You know, and the fact that you could get your Amiga online is ludicrous. With Wi-Fi, it's madness. It's a functionality that no one could have ever dreamed of. So good on him. And Doug's here, and we love gentle Doug, smiling, happy Doug, here to hold your hand and walk you.
We want to welcome Doug back to the United States. He just got back from what apparently was a fantastic trip to China to visit his wife's family. And he's going to be posting pictures, of course, in ham mode on a future video. He's going to try and get that going on the 1,000.
When he said that, at that point, I shook my head. The fact that he went to China is pretty cool. You know, the rest of it, I mean, Doug is genuine, that's for sure. He's not ham and egging it out there. He's hamming it, but not ham and egging it, if you know what I mean. But yeah, if this is your bag, check Doug out. We love Doug. Doug's a good friend of ours, always been a good friend of the show.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Aaron, our next story, this is a brand new video from the channel Retro Games Rediscovered.
Ooh.
This is a preview video of what's to come in just over a month in Nottingham in the UK. It is Kickstart, the UK's largest Amiga event, and I believe, Aaron, that it's just passed with their next milestone. It is now the largest Amiga event in all of Europe in 2024.
Even Germany?
Here's the thing, man. This year, Germany, it's not going down. They've canceled it in Germany, mostly because I think they're afraid of being overshadowed by Ravi and his roadshow.
Wow.
So there is
no
German Amiga event this year. I believe that they're going to be bringing it back next year for the big 40. So if you are looking to get down and funky with the biggest names in the business, in the Amiga community, including legendary developers, Stu Cambridge, Pete Cannon, Or he's not a legendary developer, but, you know, legendary music producer.
Figure.
You got Pete Warriner. That's the guy I was thinking of from Revolution Software. He's going to be there. And, of course, I'll be there hosting the whole thing and sitting in on the panels. So it's going down June 29th and 30th over at the Nottingham Stadium, big soccer field, and then the after party over at the Salt Box. That's right, the Salt Box Bar. That's where we're going to be drinking and partying. And I'm going to go to bed at like 8:30. I won't.
Oh, no, I guarantee you won't be. You'll be drinking a party. Let me ask you, if they ask you on stage to, like, do a little number, Are you gonna get up there? I mean, maybe someone brings a trombone or a sax, or maybe they just want you to sing.
In fact, you know, the composer of the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack is going to be there.
Yeah,
he's one of the special guests, and he has a live band. My original plan was to take my trombone over there and sit in with them. Unfortunately,
that's madness.
My original plan did not include a first class airfare, which is what you need to check a trombone.
Your plan that was a horrible plan. Surely someone in Europe can provide you with a trombone, Boat.
That's true. Listen, I'm putting out the call right now.
You're not BB King. You can use somebody else's trombone.
If you are anywhere within the Nottingham vicinity and you've got a spare trombone in your garage, bring it to Kickstart so I can play trombone with the guy that composed the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack.
Any brass instrument.
I'm just going to jump on stage and start improv.
You know, I would love to see you play amongst any of those guys, you know, because we've loved a lot of Amiga music on this show. We haven't hated a lot. In fact, we begged for more most of the time since we can't hear it and sound effects. So, I mean, I don't think you're going to get pummeled by any of the musical people. You know, I think you should be okay there. So I would love to see you get up on stage. I'm looking forward to this thing. I can't wait till it goes down.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, that is Kickstart. Now, Aaron, coming up next, we've got this is Neil's new video. This is not Amiga related, but it's so cool. It's so cool that we've got to talk about it. This is the first full-size 3D printed arcade cabinet I've ever seen. And not only is it a 3D printed arcade cabinet, but it's the coolest arcade cabinet design ever of all the times. And that's not debatable. Don't even try and debate me. Computer Space, Aaron, is there a cooler looking cabinet?
Probably not. It's certainly in the top couple. And it's because it doesn't look like a computer cabinet. It looks like some kind of like futuristic, like, I don't know, portal of
it looks
coolness.
Like something that if you can jump into and it's going to teleport you to another dimension is what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sleek, sexy unit. In fact, when you see old arcade flyers with it, there's almost always a Kirby chick because it has it's a very feminine cabinet, which is what I like about it. It's a beautiful thing. And I will say, first of all, trying to print one of these was madness. I mean, these guys are nuts. You can't do this without, I mean, an unbelievable amount of machinery, money, and expertise. You know what I'm saying?
This is not going to happen unless you are a commercial outfit, which the guy that runs the Arcade Archive is. He is a commercial arcade outfit that works for, I think the name is Herber, that he works for.
If you think about it, they've got one of the top arcade game experts there, the Arcade Archive guy. Then you've got the machinist guy that's down there. Then you got Neil, the idea man, right there. This place has, they're one of the few places probably on the planet that has the exact right people in the right spots. Now, that much said, if there's any other man on earth that could do something this insane, it's my buddy Dave Z. He's got none of those things. But I can certainly see him trying to print this one shoebox-sized chunk at a time because he's out of his mind. But this was impressive, and what was more impressive was the actual finish, you know, that they put together because these machines have a glittery look to them, you know, and it's amazing what they did. Like, I wouldn't have thought of any of the stuff they did to even hold this thing together because it fit together like a big puzzle, like a Jenga. Right. Or something, right. and then they kind of glued it together, and then they've reinforced it in certain ways. I mean, it's very impressive, I have to say.
Well, to me, the most impressive thing is that paint job. They use that special resin paint with the glitter, and man, you watch that, like, and when you watch, this is one of the few times in your life you're going to want to sit there and watch the paint dry, because as it dries, the glitter just goes into overdrive, and it looks so awesome. It looks so cool.
Yeah.
So, Big props to Neil for making this thing happen, and of course his whole team. They all work together over at the Arcade Archive, making your dreams come true.
I'd love to know what it cost in manpower and resources. I'd love to know what it cost to make this, and now I'd like to know what it would cost to go buy. Back in the day, you won't believe me here, Boat. But back in the day, I would occasionally come across someone selling one of these on eBay or locally. Not local to me, but like I was in a big ring full of arcade sellers. And even back in the day, these things weren't cheap, but they weren't insanity numbers like today. Like I have no idea what one of these would be worth now, but I would wonder how much money they save at the end of the day by doing this, because this could not have been cheap. I'm talking manpower.
I believe that this is definitely like if you think about the number of hours that they spent designing this thing,
yeah,
I'm sure that they didn't turn a profit. But
oh no,
you can get the 3D printed files.
Yeah,
they have made those available on printables. I think is what I'm gonna look it up right now. Computer space, just to see if this comes up here. It looks like I'm going to see if they're charging something for it. No. In fact, you can download the full size cabinet for free. This thing, like you said, it's going to cost you a lot in materials, and it's going to cost you mostly in hours to put this thing away. But hey,
yeah.
Listen, this is a labor of love. It's for the arcade. It looks so cool sitting next to the Pong. What you have here in the arcade, which I've been lucky enough to go to, is you've got Computer Space and Pong side by side, two of the most storied arcade machines of all time, next to each other, and it's super great. If you check out the video, you can even see the aforementioned Pajaco is there getting to try it out in person. He's one of the lucky ones, Aaron.
You know, it's something to consider. Like, I used to be part of this ring that would show people doing horrible things to arcade machines, and I distinctly remember that someone got one of these machines, gutted it, and I believe they put a track and field in there, if I'm not mistaken. It was something like that. And I remember thinking, and people were like, because what we would do is we would all be appalled together. But that one was one that took the cake. So somewhere out there is one of these machines with probably multiple of these with other stuff in them. So you can think about what went into putting that crap in there.
According to Happy in the chat, he says that a blue one like this sold for $60,000 recently.
There you go. So there's the number. Going up, and that doesn't surprise me, because these have become increasingly rare. And I can't imagine they made more than a couple thousand of these max. Probably not even that many. Maybe 500 to 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Aaron. We move on to a video that I put in here just for you.
Okay, good. Because
this is
there. It is.
Yeah, reload the page real quick. This is your old buddy, Hold and Modify.
Oh yeah,
everybody's favorite Amiga commentator online. Now, Aaron, I refuse to give this guy a click because, number one, he uses some really horrible AI art. And number two, the whole title of his video is so ludicrous that it just angers me, and I don't want to engage with it.
I tried to get you to watch this. I believe it was last week. I was like, hey, you need to go watch this guy. Hold Modify guy, he seems like a pretty good guy. He sometimes he'll just put these like stream of consciousness videos up, and this was one of them where he was talking about how crappy console games were compared to the computer games. Now, it's funny because I told you to watch this because I knew it would make you triple angry and you would drop the hammer as you love to do. But I will say, when back in the day, I would have wholeheartedly agreed with this guy. Because that's why I had a computer. Because, there were two main reasons. One, the big reason is that's what I had. It's not like I had a choice. My mom and dad got me, the computer. But also, I could pirate crap at nauseam. It was all I wanted. So that was also another big reason I had one. But, eventually, Brent had a console. And I will say, sometimes I would go in there and see Brent playing something. I'd be like, man, I really wish we could get something like that on the computer. And that happened more and more and more until I just got real mad about it. Like, fighting games are the number one culprit. But it is interesting. And I guess, a lot of people sort of have the feeling that maybe, hey, the computer gaming scene was exponentially better than the console scene in the late 80s, Bode. What would you think about that, that possibility of that being true?
You know, I'm just sort of paging through this video, and the games that he's using, the games that he's holding up here are Shadow of the Beast.
Yeah,
Sword of Sodan,
classic, another great
Sword of Sodan, and then he's got to throw up the Babylon 5 screen because you can't let anybody ever forget ever that an Amiga was used in the pilot episode of Babylon 5.
The funny thing is, hold on a second before you move on. I heard that it was used in the design of the pilot, but I heard that no Amiga footage ever aired. So that you may take that.
Don't tell people on YouTube about that.
I love Babylon 5, so I'm going to hold that banner up too.
Anyway, what does the word silly mean? Because does the word silly mean, not as good? Because I can't, having done this show for almost 10 years and playing the games that we've played, especially if you look, look at Mr. Holden Modify. He doesn't seem like he's that old. He's not like freaking L. Curtis Boyle. This guy looks like he's about my age, which means he probably would have been, coming up with the Amiga when the 16-bit consoles were coming out. Plus, most of the games he talks about are from the 16-bit era on the Amiga. There is no way in this world that if you're comparing any sort of action, adventure, or platforming game on the Amiga versus a 16-bit machine, that the Amiga is going to come out ahead. There are two or three genres where the Amiga version reigns supreme. One is simulators. Two is adventure game, like point-and-click adventure games. And three, there is no third, okay? That's it. That's the story. So if you're holding up Shadow of the Beast and Sword of Sodan as, like, this is why the Amiga was great, I can't respond to that. I don't know how to respond.
Sword of Sodan was great, and it was better on the Amiga than, say, the Genesis version, which was horrible. So, if you're going to pick one, that's not the worst choice. It is way better on the Amiga, overall, I can understand listen, people, when you have an Amiga channel, they expect you to hold the Amiga up aloft.
Sure. I mean, that's what I do. I frequently put the Amiga over when I don't want to.
Well, no, you do love the Amiga. Don't give me that. No one's buying that shtick. But, we have to be realistic here. And yeah, something else to consider, and this is one thing that I don't think gets considered enough. The Amiga 1000 came out in 85, and realistically 86. So comparing the Amiga to what was available in 86, it crushes everything. Comparing it to what was available in 96, it's not a fair comparison. It's been out 10 years.
I'll take your gambit here, okay? In 1986, would you rather play the 30 games that were available for the NES or the games that were available for the Amiga in 1986?
Oh, the NES games by a long
time. Disproved your point.
That was early on. But I guess what I'm saying is for a machine to even be considered.
The Amiga is a lot like the Washington Redskins. They always win the offseason. They've got the best. They've got the best outlook for the future. They've got the best specs. They've got the best stuff under the hood, but when it comes to execution, no good.
Also, they're no longer called that. They lost their name years ago.
They'll always be the Redskins to me.
Well, they perform like the Redskins. All I'm saying is I found this an evocative, thought-provoking video. It's funny because when you watch the video, it really doesn't get into it too deeply. Like I said, H&M does a lot of these like stream of consciousness videos, but I did when I saw the headline and saw what his general premise was, I was like, hey, I'm gonna show the boat this one, and then you refused to watch it, so I'm glad you brought it back because I was happy to talk about it.
All right, Aaron, we got our final story today. This is the Boat Fest Retro Computer Festival. We are 1 month away.
Oh man,
1 month away from the largest Vintage Computer Festival in West Virginia history. This is the third year, and it's going to be the best year. We are ramping up the events. The schedule is almost complete. We've got a full slate of presenters, a rapidly increasing auction block where there's going to be lots of awesome things for sale. We have a wonderful featured table that is going to be highlighting the best and the brightest of
the
retro computing scene and the weirdest.
Yeah.
It's all going down in our hometown of Hurricane, West Virginia. For $30, you get the whole weekend. That's Friday, Saturday, and the Amigos Picnic on Sunday morning / afternoon over at the Valley Park. It's going to be going down. Aaron, what are you looking forward to most about Boat Fest?
Well, seeing everybody, honestly, that it's always great. It's like a reunion every year, you know. And I'm also looking forward to, listen, tickets are $30, okay? And what does your money go for? Well, this year it goes for an awesome venue. Last year's venue was good, but this one's great. And it's going to make a huge difference just in the venue alone. Everything about this place is going to be top shelf in terms of our ability to put on a fun show. We know there's going to be a lot of good people there. I mean, obviously, we know there's going to be a lot of cool machines there. That goes without saying. We know that we're going to do a few shows, have a few laughs. That goes without saying. We're going to have some good food. We've added the picnic this year, which should be a lot of fun on Sunday. Hopefully, a lot of people can stick around for the picnic. But really, the weekend is just about community and camaraderie and friendship. You know, we have an international computer club every so often, and it's the same as the Amigos. Like, I wish I could take everyone from it, and instead of doing it in Discord, but just do it live. Because it's more fun to be with your friends, especially when you don't get to see them very often. And that's what this is all about. No one is left behind. No one sets off to the curb. Everyone here is friendly, and everyone here is working to make sure that you have a good time. And when everyone's kind of pulling together to make something fun, it's fun. And that's what I love about this. Everyone goes into this with the express purpose of having a good time. And I'm looking forward to seeing everyone, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys have to bring this year. It should be a lot of fun. Now I go into panic mode for the last month, trying to get all my crap ready to go boat.
All right, so there you have it. If you would like a ticket, you can go over to boatfest.info. We also have videos from previous years there. And coming up, probably before you even listen to this, there's going to be the complete schedule up for your perusal.
Yes.
All right, Aaron, what do we got coming up next week on the show?
Let's find out, boat. It's Flank, boat. It's the old Flankster. Eh? Okay. I believe the full title of it is The Misadventures of Flank, if I'm not mistaken. This should be a good one.
This is a platformer. I've heard of this before. It's spoken of highly.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to checking it out. And of course, if it's a CD32 Amiga exclusive, you know it's going to be gold.
You know, I may be an idiot.
If you like our show and you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/amigospodcast. We will see you next week. And until then,
adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/amigospodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.